Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Alex Stoker, and I'm here with my esteemed co-host, Darren Parkinson. We are here at Biz Radio U, unifying business and university by showcasing the best in business. How are you doing today, Darren?
I'm doing great today, Alex. How's your week been?
It's been pretty good. I got all my textbooks finally. I'm just studying. I have an exam Monday now. You know, school's starting up again. I got to get back in the habit of, you know, actually doing things.
Yeah, hitting the ground running with the semester too. Yeah, I made the mistake last couple semesters ago about buying my textbooks before the classes and then having to return them and playing that mess. So yeah, I've been waiting in the lines too and going through that.
Yeah, the best thing is ordering online and getting the wrong book. So yeah, not to wait extra long to get my book. So
okay,
good times. So anyways, without further ado, today we have a very special guest, past assistant vice president at Dun & Bradstreet, president, CEO, and founder of Ryla Inc., president, CEO of eVerifile, and currently the president and CEO of Chime Solutions, a fast-growing BPO provider. Not only was he these things, but also he was awarded the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award in 2010. It's my pleasure to introduce Mark Wilson. How are you doing today, Mark?
I'm doing fine. Happy to be here.
Great. Okay, so to start things off, Mark, would you mind sharing what exactly is Chime Solutions and what you do there?
Well, Chime Solutions is our family's second go at the BPO outsourced call center business. We primarily focus on customer service and providing excellent interactions for our on behalf of our clients to, you know, for a variety of reasons that have to do with customer service.
Right. And you said BPO services. Would you mind going further into that?
Yeah, that's an acronym for business process outsourcing. So companies engage in the practice of work that they would like to have done on their behalf. And the work we particularly specialize on is customer care.
Right. So essentially, whenever a customer needs help with something, they call you guys and you guys take it from there?
That's absolutely the case, yes. So, you know, for different customers, it's different things. But at the end of the day, it's us and our people talking to our clients' customers for a particular reason that has customer service at the center of it.
Right. And do you work with different companies across different industries, or is it, you know, a set group that you kind of focus on?
No, we feel like customer service itself is, you know, fairly a generic, if you will. The differences or the nuances are client specific. So we don't have any sort of boundaries around, you know, any particular industry that we would do business for.
That's awesome. Are there any specific companies that you're currently working with that you're allowed to talk about or share their names?
It's not a general practice for us. Okay. to be, you know, outward with the customers that we do business for. But, you know, I can speak generally about the industries. And we're right now in Ryla, which was our first attempt at having an outsourced call center business. It was primarily focused in telecommunications. A couple of the big wireless companies were our primary and major customers. And this, with Chime Solutions, it's been more healthcare. And healthcare-related services and customer care that we're providing support for. We have a large practice around open enrollment for a couple of our customers for, you know, medical insurance for their, you know, their clients' customers. And so, you know, this Chime is has a predominance of customers in that vertical.
That's great. And so, how did you get involved with Chime Solutions? What was the background on that?
Well, as I mentioned, Ryla, which we started a number of years ago, late 2001, was a business that got started out of my experience having been working in Dun & Bradstreet and doing providing that sort of leadership for that work that was being done internally at D&B. That led to D&B Outsource Network, led to an opportunity for me to be a support for them by starting my own company. So we did that with Ryla. Grew Ryla up very nicely and successfully exited that business with a sell in 2010. So 2012, after a couple of years just being on the sidelines, you know, just kind of helping out around town with entrepreneurs and helping to try to share some of the experience that we had there with them, 2012, I reconnected with Frontier Capital, which was my primary investor in RILA. And we looked at a few opportunities together and ultimately made the choice to buy eVerifile. eVerifile, a little bit different than the outsourced business that we'd been in before, but still primarily focused on data and some of the same tenets that we had in RILA we could apply to eVerifile. And so we bought that business 2012, started to grow that. And, you know, I maintained some relationships with former customers at RILA and had an opportunity with one of those customers to fulfill a contract that they had that was back in the call center space. So we, we basically got back into that business and sort of tucked the call center business into eVerify, which was primarily a business focused on background screening and vendor management. And so after effectively getting back into that business, there were a number of other opportunities that presented themselves. And we didn't really want to dilute the primary focus of eVerifile with more call center work. So that was the genesis for Chime being started. So my wife, who's been really active with me and partnered with me in all the businesses that we've been involved in, her and a few of our other team members sort of put the band back together and established Chime as a vehicle to support contracts that we were winning in the BPO space at eVerifile. That was to keep eVerifile from being diluted from its primary service offering, which was, again, background screening. So Chime was born to be a fulfillment partner for eVerifile. After a while, we saw the opportunity to grow that business in eVerifile. And there wasn't a real appetite for, you know, amongst the investor group to, you know, sort of deal with, you know, the dilution of the, you know, the primary, you know, focus of the business. And so we had a little bit of an identity crisis. And that I saw it as an opportunity for me to make a choice between which one of the businesses that I thought would be better long term for me. And so I made the decision to divest out of eVerifile. And in that divestiture, I took with me as a part of the deal the BPO contracts that eVerifile had won. And I took those with me and merged in with Chime. And so that was May of this past year. And so I've been there since. And so that's how Chime got started.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
So you mentioned earlier that this has been kind of a venture that you've done with your wife. So I guess you've had quite a bit of experience working with family. Do you have any insight on that? What's your experience with that?
Yeah, it's been great, actually. I get that question a lot because I think folks see it as a foreign thing that husband and wife can work together and live together too.
Yeah.
But we've been pretty successful at it. I mean, our roles are pretty defined and carved out. And so it's been easy for us to, you know, sort of stay in our lane. But then it's also been great that we're partners and friends and that we have, you know, a place to go to kind of talk about things, to talk things through. We don't always agree, which I think is healthy for our business. And I think it provides, an environment amongst our team for healthy debate and for healthy conversation about things and challenges that we have day to day as a business. And so, and I think that if you were to ask any of the leaders in our businesses what they think about it, I think you would get nothing but, you know, positive comments about it. I think, you know, they see the dynamic as one that has worked. We've expanded our business, business enterprise, you know, a lot as well. My son, Ryan, after finishing he went undergrad at Georgetown and then finished law school there as well, started a local business called The Gathering Spot, which our family has invested in pretty heavily. Gathering Spot's focused on, it's a local, you know, city club. And they revolutionized the concept by, you know, focusing on, you know, a younger set of professionals in the city. And it's located in West Midtown. And so their programming has been pretty phenomenal in that they've, you know, tailored a lot of what they've done in the events, you know, to, you know, a demographic that historically hadn't had opportunity for some of the cool things that they're doing there. And it also has co-working space, a full restaurant and bar in the event space. And it's just a different concept. And so that's a part of our family holdings. And then my daughter, who finished at University of Georgia, mm-hmm. she joined the Chime team and has been instrumental in helping us around, you know, the things that really are challenging around people in our business. I mean, we're in the people business, essentially, mm-hmm. you know, hiring people to, you know, to have customer service or provide customer service to our customers. And so, you know, trying to have an idea for the mindset of the folks that predominantly work for us, it was needed. The leadership was needed in our company that for someone that is of that community, and my daughter fits that bill. And so she's been, you know, providing leadership there. And then also, you know, supporting her brother and our family in what's happening within the gathering spot, too. I think there's probably going to be room for her to do more that way. I know her and her brother are talking about ways to, you know, kind of incorporate her skill set, you know, into mm-hmm. into lending, you know, some of, you know, of what she's done at Chime over into the gathering spot enterprise.
And something just for our listeners, how would you define skill set?
Skill set is, in my definition, is what you're proficient at. The mm-hmm. thing that you know, have an ability, you know, different maybe than somebody else to be effective in. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and that can manifest itself in a number of ways. It could be, you know, people management. It could be, you know, attention to detail and technical skills. It could be a number of things. But it really is about what it is that you're proficient at and a company, in our case, companies leveraging that mm-hmm. to where we have need.
Yeah, because I feel there's a kind of a problem in university where people just want to focus on just going through it, getting that degree. But the reason I ask that question is because people don't focus a lot on building that marketable skill set. And I mean, I fell into that trap too. I was just going through college too. And then once I met a few people that inspired me and showed me different things, it kind of showed me that, yeah, you're kind of in charge of your own education, and you really, what you learn is up to you. And so for me, the key is building that marketable skill set, and that's where the value comes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point that you're making. I believe that, you know, part of the reason that I enjoy conversations like this as an entrepreneur is that there are a lot of things that happen day to day in business that don't, you know, as a matter of, you know, just everyday activity get shared. Mm-hmm. And so I believe that it's my responsibility to, you know, sort of step up and make sure that that happens. And I think it contributes to what you just said, which is, you know, having people kind of get an understanding of and taking responsibility for their own education and then internalizing that to, you know, have it be available to whatever it is that they're working on, whether mm-hmm. it be a business or whatever it is. So.
Okay. So I guess I'm kind of the psychology guy. So I mean, some of the stuff you've done right now, I mean, we just see the end product kind of and what you've accomplished, but I want to take it back to the start. How did you start? Where did you get? Because I'm sure a lot of people are in that position, the majority of people are in that position right now. So what happened to you that started you on this path? What do you do differently?
Yeah, so I think at the center of everything is passion and motivation for whatever it is that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so, candidly, I never really, at the beginning of all this, had, you know, sort of entrepreneurial aspirations. I wasn't a person that was just had this burning desire to own a business. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that for me. You know, professionally, I did pick up some skill set or some skill and some experience, a set of experiences that I think, you know, sort of turned the light on for me as to where I have passion. And that's really centered around people and, you know, whatever ability that I have to have impact on people. Mm-hmm. And so I saw the opportunity while working at D&B, you know, to have an impact on people. I was given a couple of assignments that really, you know, gave me an opportunity to do some creative things around development of people. And then that led to sort of these entrepreneurial, you know, desires. Mm-hmm. You know, just thinking that if I could do what I'd done in D&B, you know, in an environment that I controlled, that was more my business, then I would take advantage of that. And then a few years later, the opportunity did present itself. And then I saw it as that opportunity, and I didn't want it to pass. I wasn't really afraid of it. I felt that, you know, that if I were not successful, that I could always do what I was doing at D&B and to have a job. But it did work. And so, you know, I continue to be about the business of trying to create, you know, environments within our companies that are opportunities for people to develop and grow. Mm-hmm. And that's worked for us.
Okay. So what would you say was the passion that you discovered that kind of set this off in motion?
I saw in a tangible way the impact that we were having on, mm-hmm. you know, I was in one assignment, and it was a situation that the environment, most of the people worked there were single women, and we were able to do a lot, I think, to impact them in their mm-hmm. lives, you know, in and outside of work. And that was fulfilling for me. It had a gratifying effect. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought, yeah, if I can be in a situation where I can, you know, have impact like this, that I would want to do that. Mm-hmm. And I saw that and felt that passionately.
Okay.
So.
Wow. That is, that's phenomenal.
So I know starting off, a lot of entrepreneurs face a significant amount of different challenges. Was there anything specifically that you were facing when you were starting off with Ryla, and, you know, how did you overcome that?
Yeah, it's the common thing, I think, with most startup businesses, no matter, you know, what that business is focused on, and that is the access to capital. I mean, it's really hard to start any meaningful business, you know, without financial resources that will allow you to do that. And so we for sure struggled with that out of the gate. And but we had a real scrappy, you know, mentality about things, where it was that, you know, it could all be figured out, and that we needed to try to, you know, do things to, you know, to make things work. And so we just tried, you know, any number of creative things to finance the business until we got to a point where we'd had enough success that we could get traditional, you know, sources of funding.
Right. That's awesome that you guys eventually got to that point. Mm-hmm. So you also had the benefit of working with your family. You know, you said that your wife's been helping you, and currently your son is starting his own business. So what are some ways that you guys in the early days challenged each other or influenced each other to grow when maybe you or your wife hit a wall with self-doubt or anything like that?
Yeah, I don't know that we ever hit the wall of self-doubt. I'm generally a half-full glass kind of guy. I mean, I think it can mm-hmm. get done. You know, I'm pretty optimistic about things. I think we're a good balancing act there because, you know, my wife, Shelley, is more conservative in her thought about things. And that's good for me because, you know, and I think as is the case for a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, it's, you know, you see the blue sky and you just feel like everything can be done. Right. And, you know, you need, you know, a governor, you know, to kind of, you know, put the brakes on some things and to help you think things through, to slow things down even. And we definitely have that yin yang effect on one another.
Yeah.
You know.
So I guess a good way to break it down is, the family dynamics and structure, that's essentially the machine, and the byproduct is just everything that you've accomplished and your family's accomplished.
Yeah, I'd be remiss in all of these conversations if I didn't mention, you know, we talk about family, and, you know, I think that definition, you know, should be expounded on in this conversation. Family for us is, you know, it's more than, you know, bloodlines. I mean, we mm-hmm. have our leadership team is that of family. You know, it's not, the things that have been accomplished are not possible without just a solid team. And, you know, and in both examples, actually in all three examples of the businesses that we've been in, mm-hmm. it's the same essentially the same core team, the same family. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I just think that's worth mentioning.
Okay. And how were you introduced to that core team? Was that from a previous job that you met them all, or were these people you went to school with?
No, none of them were people that I went to school with initially. I mean, we do have folks that I've, you know, I have lifelong childhood friends now that work in our business, you know, that have joined later in that. But, you know, a variety of places, you know, some folks we just recruited for early on, some folks we got introduced through relationships that we've had, like at D&B, there were a few people that I knew there that, you know, worked at D&B and now work for us. The first two people did come with me from D&B, the first two employees of the company. One of those persons is still with our team and is one of our very senior folks in Ashok Varvan. But then our CFO has been with us. I mean, she came with us in the kind of the second stage of Ryla. That's Teresa Badgett. She's been there ever since. You know, we have leaders on the team like Natalie Erskine. Natalie was with, worked at Dun & Bradstreet, and we were able to bring her on early on. Others through family connections. My wife knew one of her friends, and so our person that's over training now in Ebony Jean-Louis, she started with us early. She actually started with us on the phone and moved her way through the organization. Now she has all of the responsibilities for training. I mean, I could go on. I mean, one of the folks that has some operational leadership responsibilities in our company today is Omar Hawk. He's been with us, you know, from early on and moved and worked in a number of our offices and carried our culture to those offices. I mean, there's just a core group of people. I'm sure I'm missing somebody here now. I hate to, I named a few people and, you know, I don't want to have, you know, have not spoke about anybody who's been really essential and core to Shelley and I, mm-hmm. as we built this organization to where it is now.
Right. And you mentioned earlier about company culture. That's obviously a really vital part to any organization. How would you describe your company culture?
You know, we've mentioned this family situation, family reference here, right. A couple times this morning. That's probably an apt and good description of who we are. But beyond, you know, that, I think that would go all the way down to the, you know, the say down, it'd go across our company to the folks that actually provide the customer service on the phones. I think if you ask a majority of them, they would tell you that they feel like they work in a family environment. And it's one where people are first, and that we're trying to have a litmus test for any decisions that we make be centered on the people that are involved in those decisions and how it impacts them. So, you know, it's, you know, from a customer standpoint, it's one where we will do everything we can to delight our customers and have them feel like they got a good partner.
Right. So. And I think I remember this from, you'd spoken in one of my classes a little over a year ago, which is when I was first introduced to you. And I remember you saying something about one of your goals was to make your employees feel like they have the best job that they have.
Yeah.
So that's certainly something that, you know, you have in your mind, trying to keep everyone happy. And
yeah. Well, everything flows there, right? I mean, so if you think about that concept, just practically, that if you have the person that's actually delivering the service that our company is being hired for, in the best place that they could be, you know, in terms of enjoying their work and the environment, then our chances increase exponentially to doing what our clients would like for us to do for them.
Right.
So to me, it's just a, you know, a practical business decision to make sure that our most precious and valuable asset is cared for. Those are our people. Mm-hmm. So it's not overly complicated for me to, you know, to have that as a strategy for our business and, you know, and to focus on that and to have, you know, in a real and in an intentional way, do things that have impact positively on our people.
Right. Especially because, you know, the clients are the life source of the business. So you got to do what you can to make them happy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why they hire you.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's customer service that we're providing for them. And so, you know, we got to do what we can to make it something that is enjoyable and that, you know, that they, you know, they're getting what they're paying for, actually.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So essentially, you must be an expert in dealing with irate customers. So what are some of the things that you do with your company that you guys have learned over the years in dealing with situations like that? And what are some of the things that you do to tackle those situations?
Well, so again, at the core, the person that's having to be faced with, you know, an irate customer, not all the customers. I mean, I think customer service has a bad billing that everybody's calling in is unhappy. There are a fair amount of people that are, for sure. But there are people that, that come in and are quite pleasant and just need help. But at the center of that is just what we've talked about, is that the person that is charged with having to deal with a person calling in has to be in the right mindset, has to feel a certain way in order to deal with that irate caller in an effective way. So we got to start with them and make sure we're doing everything to make sure that they're good. Then beyond that, there are some specific skills that people have to deal with, you know, de-escalation of issues. And, you know, so we just, you know, we have obviously, you know, soft skills training and information that we share with our people as to how to do that.
So could you elaborate a little bit more on maybe the de-escalation of situations?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, you know, there's any number of techniques that that can be put in place to do that. And we know all of them. I'm not sure, you know, that we could conduct that training here this morning, but but you know, it's, you know, it's just technique as to what you, you know, you train your people to how to do, you know, how to react to a person, you know, a person says this, you say that, you know, type of approach. Your mind, but it's all about your mindset, though. So that if that person that that's responsible for the de-escalation is understands, you know, how to do it, but then also feels good about doing it, then that's the key.
And I mean, a mindset, that's something that doesn't happen overnight. So how do you incorporate that into the people you work with?
We're just, we try to be selective about the people that we bring in. And being selective means being clear about what the responsibilities are that that person's signing up for. And then that's, and that, that includes everything up to and including, you know, sharing with them, you know, what the real life experience of the work is and giving them the opportunity to make a choice about that, whether or not that's, you know, work that they want to do or not. So, so I say that, and then it's just the other environmental things that we do around associate engagement, employee engagement. You know, yesterday was a great example. My daughter Lauren, who I spoke about, you know, and others on our team that that have the responsibility for engagement, you know, put together a flapjack is what they were calling it, a flapjack, you know, kind of event where all of the leadership team were cooking pancakes for the for our employee base. So everybody got to come through the break room yesterday and have breakfast prepared for them by the leadership team. You know, it's those things that show appreciation, small things, but that show appreciation for the work that folks are doing that we do on a routine and regular, consistent basis.
Wow. So a topic that keeps coming up throughout this is opportunity. And in the beginning, you mentioned that that's kind of where you found your passion and that's kind of where a lot of this started. What did you do to create those opportunities? What have you done differently?
To create the opportunities to, to explain?
Because opportunities, I mean, they present themselves in different ways. You can do it by luck, but for me, I've learned that getting out there and just doing things, the opportunities start presenting themselves when you start acquiring knowledge, when you just, you don't stick to your safe zone and you break out of your comfort zone and try new things and the world starts painting a different picture. So,
yeah. Well, if I think about the first example of Ryla, you know, as I said, you know, I worked at Dun & Bradstreet for a while and never had entrepreneurial aspirations at all. But in that experience, I saw where there was something that I did enjoy and would like to do beyond just working for D&B, and you know, and that had to do with inspiring and helping and developing people in a professional environment. So I saw the opportunity. I mean, I knew that I got exposed to the fact that I liked that, And then it was just a matter of when the opportunity presented itself that I would take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And so that happened, you know, kind of shortly thereafter. And I got myself comfortable with it by just thinking that if it didn't work, I always had a fallback, mm-hmm. which is that I could go back to work and just work a full-time job, you know, for a company mm-hmm. and not have to try to do this for myself. So I never was afraid of it. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, I had optimism that it would work. And I had the passion to try to make it work. Mm-hmm. So it was worth the shot. So I think at the end of the day, it's a situation where if you get, you know, tied into things that really drive you, that move you, mm-hmm. and you got an opportunity to do that to support you, yourself, your family, those are, I think, the catalyst for, you know, starting a business and being mm-hmm. an entrepreneur or any endeavor, really.
Yeah, exactly. Because the hardest thing about starting a business or starting anything in life is starting it, funny enough. Because, I mean, an idea is just an idea. An opportunity is just something that comes up and can pass you by. But until you take that action, that's where it comes. That's where I think entrepreneur for me stands out. Because for me, entrepreneurs, it's not about having the idea, it's about the execution.
There's no question about that. There are thousands of people that have thousands of ideas mm-hmm. that don't ever get executed on. Mm-hmm. It's a good point that you're making. And because it's not easy, you know, if starting a business and being successful with them was easy, there would be a lot more people that would own businesses.
Yeah.
And it's just not easy. And, you know, so that's where I think the passion part of it, the thing that moves you, mm-hmm. you know, makes it easier, because there is a lot of places where it'd be easy to quit, you know, and not have the resilience that you need, because there's a lot of no's mm-hmm. in trying to start a business. You get turned down a lot. You run into a lot of walls. Mm-hmm. Unless passion exists, it's hard to kind of keep picking yourself back up.
Yeah, something interesting that I saw in a prior interview, one of the statements you made, you reached out to an investor, you said, before you actually had the company started. Can you elaborate more on that experience, if you can recall that?
No, tell me more. What was the experience?
I just saw in an interview, and it was just interesting to me that the way you worded it was, I think, not trying to put words in mm-hmm. your mouth or anything, but before you like established or had the company going, you reached out to investors before that. And what is your experience with that in acquiring investors?
I think that was for E-Verifile, the acquisition.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, just trying to make sure that I'm making informed decisions about whatever steps that I'm going to take, you know. And so, mm-hmm. you know, just, and I think that's it's foundational for all of what we're talking about here now, is being studious and being informed about whatever it is that you're trying to do and whatever, you know, decisions that you're trying to make. Having a base of information that can support that decisioning mm-hmm. is really key and critical, mm-hmm. you know. Right. And so, that's what you were hearing me, you know, kind of,
yeah.
you know, say in that example is, you know, I just reached out and, you know, tried to talk to a few investors about, you know, what their mindset
yeah.
was going to be and how they were going to, you know, what their expectations were going to be. And,
yeah.
You know, how that was going to impact me and the company and our leadership.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, because the part that really resonated with me was, a lot of people and inspiring entrepreneurs, they want to create a finished product out, like before they present it to anybody. They want to be confident in anything. And I've been reading a book, The Hustle, right now. And one of the things that was mentioned in it is, if you're not embarrassed by your product when you're first presenting it, you got there too late. So that's one thing that resonated when I heard you say that. And it just, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just think, you know, again, you have to understand all aspects of whatever it is that you're trying to do, mm-hmm. you know, for whatever decision it is that you're trying to make. And, you know, working from a base of information is just, it's just a smart thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, going back to investors, now, correct me if I'm wrong. I did some research before you came in today. Mm-hmm. And I think I read something about one of your investors. You got Magic Johnson involved. What was that like?
Yeah, that was. I mean, there was definitely a cool factor to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's,
I mean,
that's definitely really cool.
But you know how that came about was in Ryla, the first call center business that we had. We had an event, and Magic has a lot of business enterprises, and I had the occasion of meeting the president of his organization, Eric Holloman. And we had just talked, you know, casually about a number of things about how, you know, if there were an opportunity for us to do business together, we would. And so an opportunity came about. We had actually won a deal to provide services to support the census that happened a few years ago.
Wow.
And it was a big deal. And we had to hire a lot of people in a very short window. And so Magic had a workforce. It was Magic Johnson Workforce Solutions. They had a staffing company. And so we partnered with them to help us to get all of these folks. And we did it really creatively, where we brought Magic in and he and I did radio spots to promote a job fair that we were going to do to, you know, get the energy and excitement for people to come out. Because obviously with Magic,
you know,
asking people to come out and apply for a job that, you know, that did. And so we had it at the Cobb Galleria. And we did it on a non-traditional day, too, for a job fair on a Sunday. And so Magic came.
Mm-hmm.
And so we drew thousands of people to come, you know, to apply for jobs for this project. And so he and I tag team on, you know, going out and talking to. We had it staged really professionally where we brought in a group of people, talked to them about the company and the opportunity. He and I together on a stage. And then we rotate and go to a next group. And we did. We went through a few thousand people on a Sunday morning that way. Magic saw that and was really impressed with how our company organized and how we put that event on. And so it was the start of a relationship. And, you know, so after we sold Ryla and started to think about other businesses, you know, they just were interested in staying close to us. And, you know, we showed them this opportunity. And so he was co-invested with a fund on the West Coast, Yucaipa, and Ron Burkle. And you know, long story short, we showed them the book, the deal, and they decided to, he and his team decided that they would co-invest with us.
Wow. That's really great.
That is, yeah, I apologize for this, but that is a magical story.
Nice.
Yeah. So, man, it's been a phenomenal interview, and we can't thank you enough. We're lucky to have you on the show. And just to wrap it up, our last question, if there was one thing that you know now that you wish you knew back when you were starting out, what would that be?
That's a really good question. You know, I guess I wish I was more educated on, you know, sort of the... you know, I started, you asked the question in the beginning about the thing that was the most difficult. And I said that it was access to capital and, you know, and raising money. I think I would have liked to have been a little bit more educated on all of that. And, you know, the nuances of acquiring or raising cash for a business and all of what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you take institutional money, it has a lot of things that go with that.
Mm-hmm.
The responsibilities that come with it, the actual deal terms for what you agree to. You know, when you're in a need situation, it sort of compromises your ability to be discerning about, is this good for me or not in the long term? And I wish I'd have been more educated about that. Not making any, you know, statement. I just wish I would have been more educated. I may have approached things differently.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the things you would have done at that time to become more educated on that process?
I think it's just, you know, I made this point earlier, too, is being studious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really studying, you know, everything about raising private equity or, you know, what traditional debt deals look like. You know, just understanding the whole financing of a business that's really taught clinically in school. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's different. You know, I think, you know, when you're going through, you know, if you're a business major and you're going through and you're studying finance and you have a class and you take it, there are some things that you do learn. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, once you get some practical exposure to the challenge and you really understand the workings of a business, and then to go back and revisit some of those studies, whether it be something formal or just even revisiting what you had learned in school, I think is, I wish I had done that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had not before we were in the situation and really needed to make some decisions.
Great. And do you, just right off the top of my head, do you have any advice for current students that are hoping to be entrepreneurs or start their own business?
Yeah, the themes have been throughout this whole conversation, and that the one is, one would be, you know, identifying where you have passion and, you know, and motivation. Very important for you to be resilient and the resiliency that you're going to need, you know, as an entrepreneur. And then I'd also reiterate this point about, you know, learning as much and being as studious as possible about all aspects of things that you can learn that are not learned, you know, practically from experience and being in a business.
Right. And, you know, for our listeners that do want to get in contact with you, what would be the best way for them to do that? Is there a Twitter, LinkedIn, or anything, email?
Yeah, so I'm not a big social media guy, and that's not a statement either. That's not a statement either. It's just, it's probably more generational than it is anything. And,
yeah.
And some of the guys that are my age probably would be offended at that, because a lot of folks that are, you know, sort of middle aged do have adopted social media. Mm-hmm. I just happen to not be one of those. But LinkedIn is something that where I get a lot of communication. I like that tool, and that's probably a good way. You know, I'm on LinkedIn, and you know, get a lot of folks that. That I communicate with, you know, on a regular and consistent basis that way.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks again for coming on the show, Mark. Again, I'm Alex Stoker, and my esteemed co-host is here, Darren Parkinson, as well. And we are Biz Radio U, unifying business and university by showcasing the best in business.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. Hopefully I've shared some thoughts that can be helpful to those that are out there that are looking, you know, to be in business.